Here we go. Okay. So let me just tell you my disclosures. I have no financial relationships to disclose, and you can tweet about this at BTG Research if you choose to do so. Not sure why that happened. Okay. So as Aaron mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit about overview of the federal wellness policy mandate. We didn't have control over the ordering of these presentations. Otherwise, we would have actually put this one earlier, but that's okay. I'll give you a little bit of background on our national wellness policy study and summarize the data over actually the first 8 years. My abstract was for 7 years, and now we have 8 years of data. And then tell you a little bit about the proposed USDA rule in this area, which is really why I care about this and why you may care about this, which is USDA has this proposed rule. Maybe sometime in our lifetime, they might actually promulgate a final rule. Who knows? I'm not holding my breath, but hopefully maybe in the next near future, we'll see something. So this might provide some baseline data to inform where we stand with regard to that if USDA promulgates a final rule. So as has been mentioned already, there have been two key federal laws relative to wellness policies. The first was adopted in 2004, and it was the Child Nutrition and WIC Reauthorization Act. And in there, Section 204 included a specific requirement that all school districts in the U.S. that participate in federal child nutrition programs. It's actually broader than just school lunch and school breakfast. It's school lunch, school breakfast, after-school snacks, school, the milk service program, the summer food service program. So by the first day of the 2006-07 school year, all school districts participating in any of these programs were required to adopt and implement a wellness policy. At that time, the required components included the following, and this is verbatim language, so goals for nutrition, education, physical activity, or other school-based activities, guidelines for foods sold or served outside of meals. That would be basically what's known as competitive foods or snack foods sold outside of the meal program. Insurance that any reimbursable meal programs had guidelines that at least met the federal standards, which at the time of this law were the old 1995 dietary guidelines. This was before USDA updated their school meal standards in 2012. Plans for implementation and an involvement of 5 to 6 key stakeholders in the development. In 2010, in December of 2010, Congress enacted the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. And in there, they included a provision to expand the wellness policy language. A lot of the revision that was there was based off of our earlier years of data where we had been doing this largest ongoing nationwide evaluation of wellness policies, and we sort of identified where opportunities existed relative to the content and the scope of these policies. And a lot of them were really not geared towards informing the stakeholders in the community about the existence of the policy, much less making it accessible so that people would even know about it. So they added a component in there to obtain permission for stakeholders to participate in development of the policy implementation, annual reviewing updates or regular reviewing updates, including a plan to inform and update the community about the content and implementation, and requiring that the district periodically report and measure wellness policy implementation, which had not been included before, and that's something that we looked at as well. So to tell you a little bit about our study, and I'm not sure why I have this like hologram up there of the BTG logo, but it's there, sorry. Hopefully somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe we've been conducting the largest ongoing nationwide evaluation of these wellness policies across the country. It's nationally representative annual cross-sectional sample of districts, primarily public school districts. Our annual sample range from about 579 to nearly 800 districts per year, and it includes both some jurisdictions, the school districts are elementary only or elementary, middle school only, and high school only. It includes a full representation. We actually have representative samples of districts at each of the 3 grade levels of applicability. But for today, I just aggregate all the data across the districts, across grade levels. For today's talk, I compiled the data over the first 8 years, 2006 to 7 through 13-14, and we actually compiled hard or electronic copies of every single district's policy in our sample. We have a collection rate between 94 to 98% per year, and our definition of policy was quite broad. It was actually broader than the generic definition that Aaron included, so it includes not just the school board approved district policy, it's the superintendent's regulations that accompany the policy. It's any policy that's embedded by reference in the content of the school district policy or the superintendent's policy that would include state law that's embedded by reference, and things like that. that. So it's a very broad, all-encompassing definition of school district policies. To have consistency, because school districts' timelines vary from school district to school district, we use the day after Labor Day as our proxy for the first day of the school year. I grew up in the Northeast. We never went to school before Labor Day. Now I live in the Midwest, and they go to school almost in the middle of summer at this point. But we use the day after Labor Day as our proxy for the first day of the school year across all the districts. Unlike Erin's study, where she measured wellness policy content across, I think, 25 items, we look at over 160 to 70 items, depending on the grade level of applicability, across each of the required component areas. So how many people in here are familiar with the WellSat tool from the Red Center? So think of our tool as WellSat on steroids. Okay, Marlene likes to joke that I take everything she does and explode it infinitely, and we see how much work we can force our REs to do in one small point in time. But so this is basically similar scheme as the WellSat tool, same components, nutrition, education, school meals. So we had 17 school meal items. Erin talked about a few of them. All of hers were including our 17 items. Competitive food and beverages, we actually look at 15 items across 6 locations of sale, in addition to 15 generic items. So the 6 locations of sale, actually it was 5 in this study. The 5 locations of sale are vending machines, school stores, a la carte lines, fundraisers in school, and classroom parties and celebrations. So it could be sale or service. And then we looked at physical activity, which was a required component. Physical education was the only component in these wellness policies that are not required, if you're familiar with them. But because physical education is the primary mechanism by which students have access to physical activity during the day, the WellSat tool and our tool both have always looked at physical education provisions within these policies. And who knows, maybe in the final world there might be some guidance on that. We never know. Staff wellness provisions, and then some provisions related to communications, marketing, and all the stuff that was in the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act related to review, reporting, monitoring, things like that, that all falls into this category of evaluation and reporting. So we have hundreds of items that we looked at across every single district's policy over all 8 years. So my staff spend a lot of time going through needles in a haystack. All policies for this study, actually every single policy in every single year, was double-coded by 2 trained analysts. Usually it was an attorney and a master's level public health or nutritionist. We coded policies, every individual provision, for whether they were required, which we equate to being a strong provision, or a weak, meaning it was vague, suggesting, encouraged, recommended, things like that. And we had lots of different exceptions all over here. To assess policy comprehensiveness versus strength overall across all 160, 70 items, whatever, we actually looked at the proportion of the items that were addressed within each individual scale, so nutrition, education, physical activity, school meals, things like that, as well as across the entire policy, so all 160, 70, whatever items. And then for strength, it's all the items that are required out of those total number of provisions, as well as within each individual component. So what did we find? The good news is that by about 2011-12, about 97 to 98% of all districts in this country have a wellness policy in place. That's that top blue line. Great news, everybody's got the policy. The bad news is, if you look across all these lines, you can see this one on the bottom is whether or not the wellness policy includes all required elements, meaning those 5 to 6 areas that are identified in the federal law. Very few policies include all required elements. The weakest provisions tend to be, or the least common provisions in the wellness policies at the time, tended to be competitive foods, but now jurisdictions with Smart Snacks are sort of adopting their own sort of policy to align with Smart Snacks. Nutrition, education, and physical activity provisions in general tend to be the most common, and PE in general. Most districts' policies all included PE in them. So if USDA added language or Commerce added language that said the wellness policy should address PE, virtually all district policies address PE, at least in some way, shape, or form. What do we know about how comprehensive they are? Now remember, comprehensiveness is basically the proportion of all items that we looked at that are even being addressed in the policy, regardless of whether they were required or not. And as you can see, the most comprehensive provisions are nutrition education. Now, if you recall from Erin's Her means what I think was about 55% or so on her 20 or so items that she looked at for her wellness policy score. Our mean is this line right here, and it's hovering right around 42% as the school year 13-14 across all 170 or 80 items. And that's pretty consistent with what I've seen in state-specific studies of wellness policies within the state jurisdiction. But as you can see, very few districts have addressed all the items we're interested in. They're relatively, they're pretty stagnant over time. We haven't seen a lot of change over time. We have seen a lot of change from year one to year eight, but starting in about year three, the policies have remained pretty consistent, stagnant over time. They really haven't changed. Strength, so remember the mean on comprehensiveness was around 42 or so percent. The mean on strength is around 20 something percent. So the policies overall, they've only addressed a lot of things and they're relatively weak overall. And again, they've remained pretty stagnant since about 2008-09 all the way through to 2013-14. There are very little changes. And these are annual cross-sectional samples, so this isn't even a panel. This is just consistent across the country. They've remained pretty weak overall. If you want to look at this by demographic and SCS, and I'm going to give you a short story here. We didn't look at free and reduced price. I don't have free and reduced price lunch here because we see absolutely no statistical differences in the comprehensiveness or the strength or the content of wellness policies based off of district free and reduced price lunch participation rates. We see no socioeconomic differences. We see some differences by race and ethnicity. Actually, interestingly enough, districts that are majority Hispanic are cut off, unlike my colleagues here. I think yours was 75% for the CEP. Ours is greater than 50% Hispanic. And so there we see the most difference across the racial and ethnic groups. In terms of size, we see district size matters, with larger districts significantly more likely than small districts in particular to have stronger and more comprehensive policies. But again, the trend lines are very similar across all three groups. And when we look at region, we do see regional effects, with the West having the most comprehensive and strongest policies, and the South and the Midwest having the weakest ones. Midwest in particular, living in Illinois now, it's disheartening to look at these Illinois policies, and they're horrific. They're actually some of the worst in the country. They took a model that was developed by the State Board of Education, literally copied it verbatim. We got some policies from the districts that had to fill in the blank, not even fill in. So that's what they thought about these policies. They were doing what they were told. They adopted a policy, but they obviously, the likelihood of implementation is probably pretty weak. Just to really quickly race through here some of the components of the proposed rule, some of the additional things. To create wellness policy teams in Chicago, they have these wellness policy champions and teams, and so maybe in the final rule there might be some language in there. Identifying somebody responsible for oversight. These are all just proposed things. I don't know what will show up in the final rule. And then expanding the range of stakeholders who might be involved in development, implementation, and review. Interestingly enough, to include PE teachers and to include school health professionals, which have been not components of the federal laws thus far. I should say, though, on the PE teachers, in districts with wellness policy champions, 9 times out of 10, it's the PE teachers who are the champions, but they're actually ignored in the policies themselves. So it's this really interesting sort of dichotomy going on. It adds goals for nutrition promotion specifically, separate from education, and it encourages using evidence-based strategies in the components of the policy. And then ensuring that they're consistent with the Smart Snacks regulation and the new meal patterns. The most important sort of new provision that's in the proposed rule relates to food and beverage marketing. And here, the proposed rule says schools would be only allowed to market or advertise foods and beverages that are consistent with Smart Snack standards, which are the competitive food standards that were promulgated by USDA. And they would not apply to marketing that occurs at events outside schools. So we have some baseline data from our study, and basically what I can show you is very few district policies are addressing these options. We have two variables we look at. Do they prohibit marketing of unhealthy options, and do they encourage or address marketing of healthier options? As you can see here, very few districts, less than about 20% in 2013-14, even addressed marketing of unhealthy options. However, when they do, they're more likely to be requirements than just simply encouraging them. So the ones that are doing it are prohibiting marketing of unhealthy items. And Mark gave healthier options, they tend to be encouraged as opposed to required, a little bit more prevalent than the prohibition on Mark gave unhealthy options. The other big thing that the proposed rule includes are a variety of provisions related to reporting and compliance and assessment. And this bar chart here just shows you sort of a wide, we have about 14 different items we review relative to reporting and assessment. And as you can see, the most common ones, the ones that are definitively required, is reporting on compliance, reporting back to the district on implementation, reporting to the public on implementation, and reporting on the nutritional quality of meal programs. Very few are required to report to the state. Very few are required to post their wellness policy on the website. Very few are required to report on any PE or PA requirements, reporting to stakeholders, reporting on meal program, food safety, fitness. So reporting is lacking in these wellness policies for the most part. So if that does show up in the federal rule, then that will be an area the districts will clearly need to work on as well. So with that, I will leave you. I spoke really fast, and I know you're all really tired, so thank you very much for sticking with me. But basically, the moral of the story is virtually all districts have a wellness policy in place at this point. They tend to be weak overall, and there are certain areas that are more emphasized than others, particularly nutrition education, competitive foods, and physical activity. We don't see a lot of variation by socio-demographic or economic characteristics, which in some ways is actually kind of encouraging. It means it's just an across-the-board issue. They're weak because the one thing I didn't mention up front is, you know, there was no direct funding provided specifically for implementation wellness policies. There's lots of different opinions about that, about whether it's an unfunded mandate or not, and I'm not going to go into that here. But some states have taken the initiative to provide technical assistance and some resources to support implementation, and there have been studies done showing how effective that can be. So I think there's lots of opportunities here for districts to continue to revisit their policies and you know, figure out how aligned they are with whatever the final federal role may look like. So thanks very much, and I hope everybody has a good rest.